ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
That's also allowed. And there's no limit to how much one might invest one's energy in that. As much as one gives, Krishna also reciprocates. Especially when one's working in a surrendered mood, submissive mood to Krishna's instructions, which are the same as Krishna. There's no difference between Krishna and his instructions. And if one marries oneself to Krishna's instructions, especially from the Bhagavad Gita, then one will always feel the presence of Krishna, especially in using one's senses to carry out those instructions. Sarvapadi Vinir Muktam Tapratvina Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Paktira Uchite Uttama. There's a way in which the senses, Krishna says also in the Bhagavad Gita, Kaina Manasa Budya Kevaler Indriyarapi, that the advanced yogis, they use all their senses only for the sake of purification. And in the case of the devotees, they are very conscious of using their time, their resources, in Krishna's service, and senses also. The senses have to be engaged. You can't restrain them. Vishwamrita restrained his senses for 10,000 years, and then later, when Menaka came, you know, he ran off. So one has to keep one's senses engaged, and one can rise above the vegas, or the urges of the senses, because the senses become purified. This is what the verse means. Sarvopadibhanir muktam tapratvena nirmalam. By engaging the senses in the service of the master of the senses, then the senses become purified. This is one of the byproducts. And with purified senses, even though one's living within the physical body, one is considered to be liberated even while in a physical body. Iha yasya harir dasye karmana manasa gira nikila apyavastastu jivan muktas uchite. It's said, uchite, that a person who's iha, in this world, in this body, fully utilizing the senses in the service of Krishna, is known to be liberated even while in this body. So the solution for the difficulties of life, and as soon as one gets a physical and mental, a gross physical body and a mental body, then there's going to be some kind of difficulty, because there's a dichotomy. There's a difference between the very subtle living being and the body that we receive in the material world. The solution is to utilize it in the service of Krishna. It's just like an iron rod. You can't burn it, but if you leave it in fire long enough, it will transform and it becomes red hot. And then you can use it to start fires elsewhere. So the same way, when we use our senses and our intellect and our body, which is really, that means senses, in Krishna's service, then the senses become spiritualized. Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagnal brahmanahutam tinaiva brahmagantavyam brahmakarma samadhina. Krishna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita that everything used in the service of the Supreme, Om Tat Sat, it transforms into Brahman, a spirit, it becomes the same as spirit. So it's very fortunate to be connected with the process of pure devotional service through the disciplic succession, which gives all facility for not only practicing bhakti, but learning all about the tenets of bhakti. We have the practice and we have the knowledge as well. So congratulations to all of you for moving yourselves across the earth, across terra firma, to come here. It's not so easy. You got to get in some kind of contraption. It's taken many, many lives to put together, and then come across the earth, risk your lives just to come here physically. But there's a fruit for that. In fact, you'll notice pictures of Shukadeva and Parikshit Maharaj sitting together with sages around them. They all showed up. Because when you show up for a session where there's going to be discussion from the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, which I guarantee both today, or your money back from this session, then there'll be that transformation that we're looking for. You won't be disappointed, because the vibration itself has potency as it's coming down through the disciplic succession. So thank you so much for making the effort to come down here and sit in this assembly. And thanks also for everybody who's joined us online tonight from different places around the world. There's a lot of other channels you could be tuning into on your computer. You could be looking at, there's a lot of news channels. There's a lot of so-called news out there. It's the same old thing over and over again. But you chose to tune into Krishna Katha, and that'll make a difference. That one choice will please Krishna when he sees that anyone is paying attention to Krishna Katha. As said in the very beginning of Bhagavatam, Shrinvatam Sva Katha Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyam Taksto Hibhadrani Vidunoti Suritsitam. Lord Sri Krishna, who is the Paramatma, the super soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who relishes his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. He notices. And we find also in the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Puravakam Dadami Puti Yogam Tam Yenamam Upayanti Te. Tesham Ivanukam Partam Hamagyan Jamtamaha Nashem Yat Vabhavasto Gyanadipena Bhashvata. These two verses, Krishna says, I'm reciprocating with those who are interested in me. And I read this morning in the 10th canto, 3rd chapter, where Prabhupada mentions that Kamsa, although he was trying to kill Krishna, he had a sense that Krishna couldn't be killed. That's as much as he knew that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of God. And he went out of his way to try to kill him. He rearranged his whole schedule and the schedule of his kingdom and everybody in it just so he could kill Krishna. But he was thinking, I can't kill him. That's a conundrum. And Prabhupada said, just by that slight recognition of Krishna's supremacy, that he can't be killed, based on the verse, janma karma cha me divyam evam yo viti tatvata tyakva deham punarjanma naiti mam eti suarjuna. That Krishna says himself, if you understand that I'm transcendental, then you'll also be liberated from this world. So Prabhupada said, even a slight recognition of Krishna's transcendent position will bring you liberation. He said, what to speak then of those who are fully attentive to understanding Krishna and his transcendental position. They hear about him, they meditate on his form, they sing, they say his name over and over again, which is the most essential part of our process in devotional service. So tonight, I'll be reading from the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and it's in regards to the three modes of material nature. We'll be starting with text number 18:19. So find here a descriptions of the various ways in which the modes affect us according to our level of knowledge, or the quality of our knowledge, our action, and the way we perform our duties. So the first text is number 19, and I'll say, please repeat, Jnanam karma cha karta cha
Jnanam karma cha karta cha
Tridhaiva guna bedata
Tridhaiva guna bedata
Prochate guna sankhyane
Prochate guna sankhyane
Yatha vach trinutan yapi
Yatha vach trinutan yapi.
According to the three different modes of material nature, there are three kinds of knowledge: action and performer of action. Now hear of them from me. Purport. In the 14th chapter, the three divisions of the modes of material nature were elaborately described. In that chapter, it was said that the mode of goodness is illuminating, the mode of passion, materialistic, and the mode of ignorance, conducive to laziness and indolence. All the modes of material nature are binding. They are not sources of liberation. Even in the mode of goodness, one is conditioned. In the 17th chapter, the different types of worship by different types of men in different modes of material nature were described. In this verse, the Lord says that he wishes to speak about the different types of knowledge, workers, and work itself according to the three material modes. Just tell me three things that you heard there that caught your attention. Yes.
That all modes of material nature are binding. Goodness,
yes,
happening.
They're all binding. You want to stay away from them if you can. And we'll talk about that. Yes, number two.
Mode of passion is materialistic.
Mode of passion is materialistic, okay. And three? Then four? Yes?
Mode of goodness is illuminating.
Mode of goodness is liberating? Yes. Did you have your hand up? Oh, somebody did.
It's, there are some differences. It's not like you just work hard and you'll get the success, because this, the purport itself says that it's not that there are three different kinds of workers, activities in work itself. So that in itself is a...
Very interesting. In fact, it's so interesting, I'm going to read the purport again. Are you ready?
Yes.
Let's see how much we get the second time. The verse first says, according to the three different modes of material nature, there are three kinds of knowledge, action, and performer of action. Now hear of them from me. Purport. In the 14th chapter, the three divisions of the modes of material nature were elaborately described. In that chapter, it was said that the mode of goodness is illuminating, the mode of passion, materialistic, and the mode of ignorance, conducive to laziness and indolence. Look up indolence. All the modes of material nature are binding. They are not sources of liberation. Even in the mode of goodness, one is conditioned. In the 17th chapter, the different types of worship by different types of men in different modes of material nature were described. In this verse, the Lord says that he wishes to speak about the different types of knowledge, workers, and work itself according to the three modes. And now, Shraddha's going to read the definition of indolence and tell us where it comes from. And then you can tell us if you've ever felt indolent.
So it's a noun which says avoidance of activity or exertion, laziness. And there's a sentence like, my failure is probably due to my own indolence. And the origin is 1595 to 1605 from Latin indolentia, which means freedom from pain.
Huh. So in a sense, when we think of this freedom from pain, there's a way that Rishabhadeva, in fact, I was just listening to him this morning when he was speaking to his sons. He had 100 sons and he gave them a long talk. It's noteworthy talk at the teachings of Lord Rishabhadeva. It's in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And there he says that nayam deho deha bhajam riloke kashtan kamam arhate vidbujamye tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shud yad yasmad brahma saukyam tunantam. He urges that one should not be indolent, don't be lazy, and don't try to avoid pain. One should rather engage in divine austerity. That means to take a little pain to do something for our original divine source, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by doing so, he says, that one will naturally come to a position where one will enjoy an everlasting bliss that goes on forever. Otherwise, just the natural avoidance of pain in this world is not successful, because everyone has a certain amount of pain and pleasure allotted. When he or she is born. And that figure won't be changed because the body that we have now is called Prarabdha, and it's a full manifestation of what we deserve. It comes as a package deal. So once you get your package, you can be sure that it's going to be filled with all kinds of ups and downs. And you can ask any astrologer in the world to read your chart, and he or she will look at your chart and say, oh, this is good, and then this is bad, and then this is bad, and then this is good. And they're going to tell you a whole bunch of bad and good stuff that is coming your way soon. So the next verse says, this is number 20, Sarvabhuteshu yenaikam bhav. Sarvabhuteshu yenaikam bhavam avyayam ikshate. Avipaktam vipakteshu tadgyanam viti sattvakam. That knowledge by which one undivided spiritual nature is seen in all living entities, though they are divided into innumerable forms, you should understand to be in the mode of goodness. Purport. A person who sees one spirit soul in every living being, whether a demigod, human being, animal, bird, beast, aquatic, or plant, possesses knowledge in the mode of goodness. In all living entities, one spirit soul is there, although they have different bodies in terms of their previous work. As described in the seventh chapter, the manifestation of the living force in every body is due to the superior nature of the Supreme Lord. As described in the seventh chapter, the manifestation of the living force in every body is due to the superior nature of the Supreme Lord. Please quote the verse. Yes, who said that? Oh yeah, go ahead, give Satyadev Prabhu the microphone and please welcome Satyadev Prabhu. That's he's brought devotees all the way from China. Please welcome all the devotees from China.
Aparayamitastanyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhutam mahabhavo yaya dandayate jagat. That one?
That's it?
Okay.
Can you just...
Yeah, Krishna says, in the previous verse he describes the inert, unconscious material nature, which is bhumarapanalo vayo kamano bharavicha. So he says, besides this inferior material nature, there is a superior spiritual nature, or spiritual para prakriti, my energy, but it's superior, it's conscious. And these conscious separated beings are struggling with the material nature. Yes, they're struggling with the inferior material nature.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So he says, as described in the seventh chapter, the manifestation of the living force in every body is due to the superior nature of the Supreme Lord. Thus, to see that one superior nature, the living force, in every that one superior body, in thus to see that one superior nature, that living force in every body, is to see in the mode of goodness. That living entity is imperishable, although the bodies are perishable. Differences are perceived in terms of the body, because there are many forms of material existence in conditional life. The living force appears to be divided. Because there are many forms of material existence in conditional life, the living force appears to be divided. Such impersonal knowledge is an aspect of self-realization. So I'd just also like to refer to the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna talks about how those whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see how the living entity lives in the body and how he departs from it. And that you'll find in 15:8. Thank you. This set of verses, actually, I'm looking for 15:10. Ukraman tam stitam vapi bhunjanam vagunan vitam vimudha nana pashyanti pashyanti jnana chakshusha. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature, but one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. From Sattva-gun, we get transcendental knowledge. That's confirmed in the Bhagavatam. In the first canto, second chapter, Sattvam Yad Brahmadarshin. This verse is Partiva Dharano Dumas Tasmanagnis Trayimayaha Tamasastu Rajastasmat Sattvam Yad Brahmadarshinam. Here, Sudha Goswami is giving a metaphor. He says that the mode of ignorance is like raw wood. And above that is the mode of passion, which is like smoke. And above that is fire, which is Sattva-gun. So he mentions that in different stages, we're affected by the modes. Smoke disturbs, but it never serves. But fire can give us Vedic sacrifice and knowledge. And in that verse says, Sattvam Yad Brahmadarshanam, from Sattva-gun, one can have a vision of the spiritual nature. So a person in the mode of goodness has this vision of when he or she sees another living entity, that there's a spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna within that body. And this we hear from Krishna in the fifth chapter of the Gita. Vidya vinaya sampani brahmane gavihastani shunichaiva shupakecha pandita samadarshinaha. That a learned person is one who has this vision. Whatever the body is, whether it's a dog, a dog-eater, a priest, a cow, an elephant, he sees there's a soul that's part of Krishna animating the body. So this is vision in the mode of goodness. And differences are perceived in terms of the body because there are many forms of material existence in conditional life. The living force appears to be divided. Such impersonal knowledge is an aspect of self-realization.
No, because I thought he was sick. I heard he had the flu and that he wasn't meeting. So I can call him on the way home.
Public service announcement. Text number 21. Okay, we'll take three reflections or stimulating questions. Yes. Sundarananda Prabhu, who is firmly situated above the mode of goodness.
I'll take that as your blessings. So, one point that I recollected was when you were talking about how living entities try to avoid distress. And just in the beginning of the 18th chapter, Krishna talks about renunciation in the mode of passion. And he talks about how renunciation in the mode of passion is when someone gives up activities because it's troublesome. Then it's actually not renunciation in the mode of goodness, but it's an renunciation in the mode of passion.
Yeah, very, very good point. And there's a way that when things don't go my way in my activity, I might just say, I quit. As we used to say, there's an old saying, I take my bat and ball and go home. It's like if you don't like the way the game's going, it's like, it's my bat, my ball, I'm going home. But you don't get the result. There's no fruit. And you find that if you do your duty steadily, even though things may not be going your way, then the fruit is there. We continue to do our duty dutifully, regardless of what the result is, because we're working for a higher principle. Of course, there are various principles that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions. He says, some people work out of fear. Some people work for prospect, means what do I get in return? Someone once asked me, they came up to the book table and said, okay, I'll sell books, but what does it take to get a premium? That means some kind of special reward. Of course, it was a transcendental premium. And then above prospect, there's duty. And above duty, there's love. So these four motivating factors are there. And motivation is a very important part of which modality one is being conducted by. Somebody's raising their hand somewhere. Yes. Mukharavind.
When I was taking morning to the morning walk, and I was seeing the birds in the sky, and I was seeing that, as Prabhupada mentioned, this bird, beast, aquatics, I was seeing that how conditioned they are. Just they had to fly in the morning. I was seeing that everyone was flying like one place and putting so much effort. And what Krishna has given in this life is the knowledge. If you don't take the knowledge, we may also end up in that kind of situation. So I was just feeling so much gratitude that we have the direction, we have the instructions of a spiritual master, the guidance that we can take out of this body, not just fly in the sky without any purpose.
Yes, it's true. I saw some ducks the other day. They fly in a V, and they tell each other, you know, go this way, go that way. It's uncanny, the all-pervading intelligence. Yes,
Balmukunda. When we go out, and if you are situated in mode of goodness, the all cars looks just a car. But when it comes down to passion, we look at the brand. So this is that, and that kind of stimulating. So how we keep our consciousness constantly like in goodness, because it keeps on fluctuating.
Well, just remember, it's Krishna's car. You know, it's Krishna's house. If you think it's my house and my car, then there's a different relationship that you'll have with it. But if you remember that all these things I'm just using in Krishna's service, and it's not a matter of projecting yourself, like you wear a pair of shoes and somebody goes, ooh, that's really you. As a salesperson, you put on a jacket, it's like, that's really you. It's like, really? Oh, man, cool. You know, hats are a big thing, shoes are a big thing. You know, there's a store in Burlingame called Soul Desire. And I was walking by the shop yesterday, and they have these ornate pillows, the kind we'd put deities on or something. And they have like these, you know, really nice shoes on them. There's a red shoe and a blue shoe. And everyone's like, whoa, if I could wear that, you know. And, you know, I got 50 pairs of shoes. And there's this idea that I am my shoes, or I am my body, or I am my car. This is my car. But devotees take what resources they get from Krishna. Tena tyaktena bhunjita. I lost all my pundits over here. Ishavasyam idam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat. Tena tyaktena bhunjita magrida kasiswiddhanam. Okay, Aprameya, come on. Give them the microphone. Tell us what that verse means. They're specialists in certain shastras. We have Trivedis and
Ishavasyam.
Yeah, recite the verse and just give us. Tell us why I quoted this verse in relationship to what I just said. Give the logic behind it.
Ishavasyam idam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat tena chaktena bhunjita magrida kasiswiddhanam. So you're talking about how first you started off with the shoes, and like, you know, everybody has their own thing, and like these are stuff meant for deities. And then I think I lost somewhere, but you're going to a point that everyone has something to do with their own quota.
Yeah, tena tyaktena. If you use whatever resources are there with the idea that everything is Krishna's, it's all controlled and owned by him. And then tena tyaktena, whatever set aside is your quota so you can do your duty, then that's yours. And if you do that, then you'll have a different relationship with everything. Just like, you know, you have a house or apartment, but, you know, you dedicate it to the deity. All Vaishnav Grahasthas have deity somewhere in their house, even if it's a simple altar picture. And then, you know, when they open their house, they say, this is not my house, this is Krishna's house. When they come home, they say, Krishna, I'm home, to here to serve you. And, you know, when they eat, they don't just eat, they take the food and they offer it to Krishna. They say, you know, this is yours, and thank you for the remnants. And so devotees live like that all the time. And in that way, they don't become entangled. Brahman yadaya karmani sangam tyakva krotiya lipitena sapapena padma patram ivambasa. Beautiful metaphor Krishna gives of the lotus flower is in the water but is never touched by water. So he says that one who dedicates everything to the Supreme and thinks that I don't, that the result is not mine, that person is never touched by the material world. It's just when I develop ahankara that I'm doing it and this is mine. That's when I have a problem, because it's not really mine. Asanga hyayam purusha, I have no real relationship with the material energy at all. But when I claim that I do, then I'm in maya, and then there's a great burden on my head. Bhayam dvitiya abhinibeshita syad ishad apitasya viparyayo smriti. Havi Yogendra says, when you think in terms of there's something that's God and something that's not God, that's mine and that belongs to him, or there's no God and I'm God and everything belongs to me, then bhayam, fear arises. And this is a reversed mentality. So Krishna consciousness is meant to give a cure to that kind of mentality. Was there one more? Yes, two more? Online, okay.
Hare Krishna. You mentioned that smoke disturbs but never serves.
Yes.
I would like you to request to elaborate a bit on that, and also you mentioned that fire serves like Vedic sacrifice.
Well, the mode of passion, it looks like something's happening but nothing really is. It's like, you know, you go to somebody's house for dinner and you hear them in there, the pots are moving, and it's like someone told me they went to some gourmet's house. There's a famous chef, and they were sitting out there and they brought out some carrots, like really long, thin, special California carrots. And they were thinking, is that it? You know, that's all they brought. You know, the material nature, in the mode of passion, we're hearing about everything. This is Prahlad Maharaj says, Kutra shisha shuti sukham murgatrishni rupa. So it's like smoky, illusory, like a mirage. It kutra, he says, where is it? Where's the substance here? It's just smoky. You don't actually get anything. You look like there's some forms there, but they're not something that I can meditate on, nothing that will give me satisfaction. So he says, it's you hear about it, but you never actually get it. This is the mode of passion. A lot of promise, no delivery. Always you get one place, and then there's somewhere else to go. You get to one number, no matter how much money you make, there's always bigger numbers you can make. And guarantee you, billionaires, they're thinking in terms of like, how can I get more? It's like you've had enough, you know? That's it. Mode of passion. And like some people, they build their bodies so much, you go in there and go, you're done, man, stop. You know, you don't need to do anymore, stop. But, you know, in the material pursuits, you get in the mode of passion and you just think, you know, more and more and more. And there's no there. You can't ever stop and actually appreciate what you have. Nothing that actually serves your ultimate purpose in life. Smoky. Okay, from online. First, tell us where it's from.
From Chennai.
And we'll try to guess who it is. Oh, is it Vrindavan?
Yes, his mom.
Haribol. Everyone say Haribol to Vrindavan.
Haribol!
It's just not the same here anymore without Vrindavan and Vrajan.
That's true. Hare Krishna, dear Vaisheshika Prabhu, please accept our humble obeisances.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you for a wonderful lecture. I really like what you said about not quitting. The temptation to quit is huge, but with Krishna by our side, nothing is impossible. I'm beginning to feel that now. The only thing that can motivate us in our life is changing prayers to the Lord. Thank you very much. Mom, Vrindavan and Vraja, check in from Chennai.
Haribol! You feel much better now hearing from you. Thank you. Okay, so the next verse is number 21. And this says, Pratyaktvena tu yajnanam nanabhavam pratyakvidan vete sarveshu bhuteshu tajjnanam hiti rajasam That knowledge by which one sees that in every different body there is a different type of living entity, you should understand to be in the mode of passion. Purport. The concept that the material body is the living entity and that with the destruction of the body the consciousness is also destroyed is called knowledge in the mode of passion. According to that knowledge, bodies differ from one another because of the development of different types of consciousness. Otherwise, there is no separate soul which manifests consciousness. The body is itself the soul, and there is no separate soul beyond the body. According to such knowledge, consciousness is temporary, or else there are no individual souls. But there is an all-pervading soul which is full of knowledge, and this body is a manifestation of temporary ignorance. Or beyond this body, there is no special individual or supreme soul. All such conceptions are considered products of the mode of passion. A few things you heard? Want to hear it again? Yeah? Okay. That knowledge by which one sees that in every different body there's a different type of living entity, you should understand to be in the mode of passion. Purport. The concept that the material body is the living entity and that with the destruction of the body, the consciousness is also destroyed is called knowledge in the mode of passion. And this is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam when Brahma creates the universe. He institutes various kinds of avidya. And one of those is the fear of death and thinking that when I die, then I'm finished and everything is dismantled and there's nothing left, just darkness. This is knowledge in the mode of passion, no understanding. And this is mentioned, vimuda nanapashyanti, from earlier in the, as I mentioned, in the 15th chapter of the Gita, where Krishna is talking about how a soul leaves the present body, goes to the next body. Remember, he said, ukramantam stitam vapi bhunjanam va gunanvitam vimudha nanapashyanti means a person who's ignorant can't see what's happening, mood of passion. Just thinks that, you know, they just died. Now, Satyadev Prabhu, would you mind sharing with us? He's seen a lot of people die. He's a paramedic for 20 years, and when we had our Thursday and Friday night programs at my house, he used to come from the ambulance and tell us all kinds of stories about how people were attached to a particular body and not able to distinguish between the living force in the body or the living force that just left the body. They thought people were the body. Color commentary, please go ahead.
Wow. Well, let's see what kind of flashbacks come in. Well, of course, there were, I saw, you know, so many different people at the time of death, but maybe one of the recurring themes was how unprepared people were for that very moment, even though they knew it was coming. When that moment actually comes, they have to admit, wow, this is it. And at that point, what I often noticed was that people, it was only at that moment that they wondered what their life was about and what, you know, what it was all meant to be. During their whole life, they didn't think about it and they didn't prepare for it. And that was a common theme. And of course, I saw lots of people that were terrified. They knew they were dying. And of course, you know, the body is in a lot of pain and a lot of distress. If they're, most people aren't conscious, but if, those few that are conscious, they're usually short of breath, and they're having difficulty breathing. It doesn't matter if you have cancer or you have some sort of heart problem or infection. Eventually, you come down to one last breath. You start with the first breath, and you end with the last breath. So people are often afraid, but those who had some sort of religious practice during their life and had come to terms where they were aware of their eternality, those persons were very peaceful. and they weren't distressed. My son, my best friend, his father, when he was dying of lung cancer, and he was in the hospital, Bob, and he was surrounded by his family. He was lucky enough to be surrounded by his family. And most people die alone in their home or in the hospital or on the street. But he was surrounded by his oldest son and his middle son and his daughter. And he said to his youngest son, he was a Teamster, truck driver his whole life, and worked hard. And he looked at his oldest son and he goes, I know I'm dying now, and I don't know what the purpose of my life was. And so he asked his son, what did it all mean? Like, can you give me some direction here? And then his son said, Dad, you had a long life. You worked really hard, and you had three children, and you supported us all, and you did really well. Thank you very much. And then he looked at his son with kind of a perplexed and dissatisfied look, saying, that's fine for you to say, you're alive, but I'm dying. And basically he was what he was upset about was the fact that he didn't know what his life was about. So those are the people that, you know, are conscious and know that they're dying, but that's very few. For most people, it's they're either unconscious or there's some sudden traumatic event. One that sticks out in my mind, should I go on? Should I continue?
I'm kind of interested in this. Right.
I saw so much birth and death. Not too many things impressed me, but there was one of the memories I have was, you know, San Francisco's a place where a lot of people come on their honeymoon. And a lot of people like to visit Union Square. Have you been to Union Square? Everyone know Union Square? Yeah.
Black Friday.
Yeah.
We used to
do high noon there sometimes. They have a little stage there in Union Square. So anyway, a lot of tourists, they like to rent bikes. The young tourists who can ride bikes. And so this young couple were riding bikes. And they were waiting at the stoplight, and a big semi was making a right-hand turn, and the rear wheel caught this woman and basically ran over her bike, and she was just squashed there on the street. And her husband was, of course, you can just imagine how distressed he was to witness his wife die right before him, right when their life was just beginning. And so my job at that point was to call the coroner, the person who comes to pick up dead bodies, and to counsel her husband. So very, very often people die from trauma, and they're not prepared, and their family members aren't prepared, and young people, babies often die. SIDS. You ever heard of SIDS?
Yes. Sudden infant death
syndrome.
There's no explanation, they just die.
And of course, people watch television and think that the doctors and emergency rescue workers can bring back the dead, which is a very rare occurrence. So it's like, my child just died, 4 hours ago, and can't you bring them back to life? No, sorry, we can't. Your child is now gone. But he was only 6 months old. He was fine 4 hours ago. Why did he die? On and on like this. So death is a difficult thing to accept, especially if you haven't prepared for it your whole life. And you haven't been willing to face it. One beat.
Ijo.
Ijo desu.
So let's hear a verse from our
Pandit circle from the Shri Upanishad, there is a prayer about leaving the body, and what is the one of the ways in which the devotees praise when they're leaving their body. Call a friend. Okay, go ahead.
Padmi Naya Sipatiraya Asman Bishwani Deva Vainani Vidvan Yodhiyasma Juharanamena Bhuyishtam Nama Uktim Videna.
Meaning?
My body be merged.
I think you're thinking of 17.
Is that Vayu?
Vayu or Anilam?
Yeah, Amitam.
Go ahead. Belt it out there. You got to kind of sing it out the way you sing kirtans.
Vayu Anilam Amitam Atidam Bashmantam Shariyam Om Kritil Smara Kritam Smara Kritil Smara Kritam Smara.
More like a Vedic pundit. Just give us a sense of what it means. What is that? What is that verse? Who's like? What is the person speaking it saying? And what do they mean?
He says that let my body be merged with air, and may you remember everything that I have done in the past, because you're the ultimate beneficiary.
Let this temporary body be burned to ashes, and let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you're the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. So there's a way that the devotee is thinking about how he or she used his or her whole life for the purpose of this moment, leaving the body. Ante Narayana Smiti, leaving the body. This requires a cultivation. This also comes up in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Somebody tell me which verse I have in my mind right now for 5 points. Come on, Priyakishori. Priyanakale Manasachalena Bhaktya Yukto Yoga Balina Chaiva Bhuva Madhya Prana Madesha Samyak Satam Param Purusham Upaiti Divyam. Meaning, in context with what we're talking about, what are the key words?
So, Priyanakale, when one is leaving the body, Manasachalena means the mind becomes disturbed. Bhaktya yukta yoga balena, through the power of yoga balena chaiva bhuva madhye pranamavesha samyak. I need help with the rest of it. One should fix the life air between one's eyebrows, and one will certainly attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So she's talking about the... Thank you. Excellent. The yogi practices throughout life to be able to be fixed when leaving the body, so much so that the yogi can be... bring the soul to the higher chakra, be able to leave. Of course, in Bhakti Yoga, Prabhupada mentions in this purport, you have to practice some kind of yoga throughout this life, in order to be prepared for leaving the body. Anyway, we've been talking a lot about leaving the body. It's kind of an interesting subject, isn't it? So now we are on 22. That's 18:22. Yatu Krishna Vare Kasmin Karye Saktam Ahaitukam Tat Varta Vadalpamcha Tat Tam Samudharitam. And that knowledge by which one is attached to one kind of work as the all in all, without knowledge of the truth, and which is very meager, is said to be in the mode of darkness. Purport, the quote unquote knowledge of the common man is always in the mode of darkness or ignorance, because every living entity in conditional life is born into the mode of ignorance. One who does not develop knowledge through the authorities or scriptural injunctions has knowledge that is limited to the body. He is not concerned about acting in terms of the directions of Scripture. For him, God is money, and knowledge means the satisfaction of bodily demands. Such knowledge has no connection with the Absolute Truth. It is more or less like the knowledge of the ordinary animals, the knowledge of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. Such knowledge is described here as the product of the mode of darkness. In other words, knowledge concerning the spirit soul beyond the body is called knowledge in the mode of goodness. Knowledge producing many theories and doctrines by dint of mundane logic and mental speculation is the product of the mode of passion, and knowledge concerned only with keeping the body comfortable is said to be in the mode of ignorance. 23. Niyatam sangarahitam raga dvesha takritam apala pripsuna karma yat tat satvikam uchite. That action which is regulated and which is performed without attachment, without hatred, love or hatred, and without desire for fruit of results is said to be in the mode of goodness. Purport. Regulated occupational duties as prescribed in the scriptures in terms of the different orders and divisions of society, performed without attachment or proprietary rights and therefore without any love or hatred, and performed in Krishna consciousness, for the satisfaction of the Supreme, without self-satisfaction or self-gratification, are called actions in the mode of goodness. 24. Yat tu kamipsuna karma. Yat tu kamipsuna karma.
Yat tu kamipsuna karma.
Sahankari navapuna.
Sahankari navapuna.
Krite bahulayasam. Tatrajasam udaratam. But action performed with great effort by one seeking to gratify his desires and enacted from a sense of false ego is called action in the mode of passion. 25. Anupandam shayam hingsam. Anapeksha chapaurusham. Mohad arad. Arabhyate karma.
Mohad
arabhyate karma. Yat tamasam uchite. That action performed in illusion, in disregard of scriptural injunctions, and without concern for future bondage or for violence or distress caused to others is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Purport. One has to give account of one's actions to the state or to the agents of the Supreme Lord, called the Yamadutas. Irresponsible work is destructive because it destroys the regulative principles of scriptural injunction. It is often based on violence and is distressing to other living entities. Such irresponsible work is carried out in the light of one's personal experience. This is called illusion, and all such illusory work is a product of the mode of ignorance. 26. Mukta sango naham vadi. Vityut saha samanvita. Siddhya siddhyor nirvikara. Karta satvika uchite. One who performs his duty without association with the modes of material nature, without false ego, with great determination and enthusiasm, and without wavering in success or failure, is said to be a worker in the mode of goodness. Purport. A person in Krishna consciousness is always transcendental to the material modes of nature. He has no expectations for the result of the work entrusted to him because he is above a false ego and pride. Still, he is always enthusiastic till the completion of such work. He does not worry about the distress undertaken. He is always enthusiastic. He does not care for success or failure. He is equal in both distress and happiness. Such a worker is situated in the mode of goodness. 27. Ragi karma pala prepsur. Lubdo himsatmako shuchihi.
Lubdo himsatmako shuchihi.
Harsha Shokanvita Karta Rajasa Parikirtita. The worker who is attached to work and the fruits of work, desiring to enjoy those fruits, and who is greedy, always envious, impure, and moved by joy and sorrow, is said to be in the mood of passion. Purport, a person too much attached to a certain kind of work or to the result because he has too much attachment for materialism or hearth and home, wife and children. Such a person has no desire for higher elevation in life. He is simply concerned with making this world as materially comfortable as possible. He is generally very greedy, and he thinks that anything attained by him is permanent and never to be lost. Such a person is envious of others and prepared to do anything wrong for sense gratification. Therefore, such a person is unclean, and he does not care whether his earning is pure or impure. He is very happy if his work is successful and very much distressed when his work is not successful. Such is the worker in the mode of passion. Dare we even hear about the worker in the mode of ignorance? As if the passionate worker wasn't bad enough. Do you want to hear it? Okay, here we go. We have courage to go ahead. 28. Ayukta prakrita stabda. Shato naish kritiko lasaha. Vishadi dirga sutricha. Kata tamasa uchite. The worker who is always engaged in work against the injunctions of the scripture, who is materialistic, obstinate, cheating, and expert in insulting others, and who is lazy, always morose and procrastinating, is said to be a worker in the mode of ignorance. I'm not casting any aspersions. Purport. In the scriptural injunctions, we find what sort of work should be performed and what sort of work should not be performed. Those who do not care for those injunctions engage in work not to be done, and such persons are generally materialistic. They work according to the modes of nature, not according to the injunctions of the scripture. Such workers are not very gentle, and generally they are always cunning and expert in insulting others. They're very lazy, even though they have some duty, they do not do it properly, and they put it aside to be done later. Therefore, they appear to be morose. They procrastinate anything which can be done in an hour, they drag on for years. Such workers are situated in the mode of ignorance. Why are you all laughing? Come on. All right. Let's have a few reflections. Oh, okay, hands are going up all over the place. Here we go.
I just want to say why I was laughing, because when I read the word Dirgha Sutri, I've read this verse, but somehow it never caught my attention. But I was remembering my dad used to tell me that word, you know, me and my brother, everyone, you are Dirgha Sutri. So now I can I mean, for anything, you know, whatever he would tell, he'll say, we will do. It's not that I am doing, we will do. So he used to use this word, but somehow I just could connect today.
Yeah, nice.
So I've been going through school all these years, and one assignment can all of a sudden be pushed till the very last minute, and you assumed it would take 5 hours, and because of such like powerful procrastination, it's done in 30 minutes because you've pushed it so much. So, you know, in Mayapur we read this for the yata every day, and I used to always go over this verse and think about how steeped I am sometimes in the mode of ignorance, and how it's such a common habit nowadays, but really hard to conquer.
I think for me, like in school, it's more of the opposite of her. Like, I'll put off something later, but then I realize it took a lot longer than I thought it would.
Yeah, I find that too.
I was just thinking how even though people see that it just takes 1 hour, but it's just that, as you said in the other class, the mind wants to do anything just but that, like whatever the important thing is. So when I read the last sentence, it just caught my attention. Just takes 1 hour, but then when we drag, like how the interest compounded, it takes a longer time.
Yeah, you mean when you procrastinate?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I noticed especially in pursuits that take a lot of concentration. One of them is writing. It means really you have to. One famous author, he said, you know, writing is easy. All you have to do is sit down in front of the typewriter and bleed. And you know, when I was writing my book, I used to go to the library to procrastinate, and I'd read books about how to write a book. And you know, one of them was an Australian guy. He said, put glue in your seat and go back. But another one I read was a book called The War of Art. You've heard of The Art of War. This is called The War of Art. And he had this proposition about how there's a force in the universe called resistance, which he spells with a capital R. He said it's so strong that every time we sit down to concentrate, and the mind pulls us far away. He pointed out that Hitler was an artist, but in order to procrastinate from doing his art, you know, he became a tyrant and started all kinds of wars. So it's a mode of goodness. It's like poison in the beginning, but nectar in the end. If you can take time, if you take time in the morning to focus on your mantras, the mantras are so powerful that we have, but the mind doesn't want to do them because it wants to do something else. It's easier. It just carries the mind away. But if you can break into the mantra, somehow you can regulate yourself, just like you regulate a horse, and you train it one way or the other to become regulated and listen to the mantra carefully and focus the mind, then you come into the nectar of life where you actually feel satisfaction. So this mode of ignorance never allows us to taste any happiness. It's actually misery, because when you procrastinate on something, you're always thinking, I wish I should have done that. I should be doing that now. Even if you're doing something else, you can't enjoy it, because you'll be sitting there like comatose, trying to like eat your troubles away or whatever you do to procrastinate, and then you're thinking, I should be doing this other thing. So it's very difficult. Anything else? Yes. And we like to welcome Raghu. He came all the way from Hawaii over here, and he's one of Prabhupada's youngest disciples, if not the. And please welcome him to ISV.
So when I'm hearing these verses, especially about the mode of ignorance, but somewhat in the mode of passion, what I'm seeing is American entertainment. And they're really celebrating primarily the mode of ignorance. And that has become people's sadhana. This is what they engage themselves with at the end of a long day, and they sit down and they're celebrating the mode of ignorance. And what's interesting about that is that one act of goodness can overtake so many hours of programming of the mode of ignorance, one Bhagavad Gita class. Not that there should be a balance of the mode of ignorance, you know, 10 hours of TV for 1 hour of Bhagavatam, but anyway, that was what I was seeing. Just as a side note, I'd taken a little course called The Infrastructure of Learning. And a number of what people are saying here about procrastinating and learning is the mind needs time to digest. And that's the reason why somebody can postpone, and then do it in half an hour instead of 5 hours, because the brain is actually processing. And sadhana, or anything of the mind, is part of that process. So if you're finding a hard time processing, doing mantras and chanting and things of that nature actually help.
Thank you. Yeah, very important. And also, just that in regard to doing mantras, remembering that these are non-different, it's the Maha Mantra and the other mantras that we've been given are non-different from Krishna. And then any of our progress in life and any of our abilities to not procrastinate or to rise above the modes of material nature really comes from the power of the mantra, not from our own power. And however, when we're able to motivate ourselves by getting good association and hearing, for instance, tonight we're hearing about the various ways that the modes very specifically affect us in the world, in practical ways, aren't we? And this makes us very much aware, doesn't it, of what's going on. So we're able to make better informed decisions as we move through our life. For instance, tomorrow, the mode of ignorance might sneak up and visit you and say, "Hi, over here, hi." And you go, "I know who you are. I just heard about you last night. And all the devotees laughed at you, and I'm not going to go there with you." And through hearing Bhagavad Gita, and then by deciding that I'll take the mantra rather than some mode of ignorance activity, celebrating the mode of ignorance, like Raghunath Prabhu said, then one becomes strengthened. And it's these regulated acts of courage that we take to overcome the lower modes based on our good association and knowledge coming from Krishna, and through our own decision. Ultimately, there's a decision at the end of the knowledge where we come face to face with a choice, and we have free will, and we can decide, do I want to go this way or that way? It can be a tiny thing. I'm not talking major life decisions. Otherwise, it's pick up my beads or pick up the phone. That can change your life, actually, that decision. In that one instance where you say, you review suddenly the knowledge you've gotten from the Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna's cheering you on from within. Although he tends to stay a little aloof, samaham sarvabhuteshu, it's like, you decide. I don't want to influence you too much. I want it to be your choice. And then you decide, I'm going to chant Krishna's names. And then he comes out. And there's a big reward there. So the life of devotion, of understanding the modes of material nature, and deliberately practicing what has been imparted to us by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, imbibing the knowledge, associating with devotees, is a life of constant victories over the lower self, the higher self over the lower self. And this is a life worth living, very stimulating and exciting. And not the least of which is it prepares us for that ultimate time. I was really struck by Satyadev Prabhu's point that near the end, people gain a different perspective suddenly, near the end of the body, prayana kale. The body's just about to go. And from the little experience I've had, the living entity, no matter what context they were in before, what conception of life they had before, they start to realize the kind of... they come back to this type of perspective they have perhaps when they were in the womb, and they're thinking like, how did I get into this in the first place? And then after a life of forgetfulness, at the very end, there's this conception that, oh, here we go again. So much better to take in Krishna's instructions constantly throughout this life and constantly prepare oneself. Yes, Satyadev Prabhu. Here comes the mic. He wants to balance out all this death guitar. I egged you on, so there's no...
I got a letter yesterday, an inspiring letter, from a devotee in Japan. Actually, she's not Japanese, she's Indian, but she's been living there with her husband for a few years, doesn't speak the language, and recently has come to Christian consciousness, and she's chanting every day and reading Bhagavad Gita. And then suddenly her husband was very ill and had severe cough to the point where he became unconscious. And she had to call the ambulance, and of course she couldn't speak Japanese or communicate. And so they brought him to the hospital. And in Japan they don't tell you so much like they do here in the West, where they explain everything that's going on. Basically, they sent him back home. And then the same thing happened again. He started coughing again, he became unconscious. And she said she just became hysteric. And she had all the signs of distress, right? She was crying, she was shivering, she was in a mind spin. And then in the middle of that, suddenly she began to remember Krishna's instructions. It just came to her. And she began chanting. She felt peaceful. She felt protected by Krishna, that ultimately she was starting to understand, because she was being tested, and we're all going to be tested. I guess what I wanted to say is, we don't know how prepared we are until we're tested. And even though she's a relative beginner in Krishna consciousness, and when the test came, when such a test came to her, the mantra and the teaching really had an effect upon her. And she says, even though she was in so much distress, she slept peacefully that night. And then actually her japa has been very much more concentrated now since this test. I think her husband's okay. But if you don't know what's going on, and someone becomes unconscious and they look like they're dying, even if they're not dying, it's distressing. So anyway, I just wanted to share that with you, that even for a beginner, when the rubber hits the road, you'd be surprised how much our practice in Krishna consciousness will be there to support us.
Thank you so much, Sayadev Prabhu. That really helped. We have to move on. One last quick point.
Hare Krishna. I was just thinking about ignorance. I have a perfect example. I was in Guyana, and I went to see the zoo. So in Guyana, zoo means it's just like a parking lot. You know, they have a bigger parking lot. The zoo is little bigger than this. And they have only some goat and some chicken and some turtles, that's all. That was basically Guyana zoo. But in that little zoo, what I saw is just blew my mind. I saw that there is one cage, and many people in the cage, everybody watching in the cage. So I thought, why is all these people? Maybe it's some tiger or some special animal. So I went to see myself what is there. So when I went there, it blew my whole mind.
I said, in suspense now.
There's a big python, big, huge python lying down. And beside the python, there was one chicken, live chicken, playing, eating grass, scratching the body, enjoying, you know. So I asked people, why this, with the kitchen, I mean, with the python, what the chicken doing there? They answered, the snake, first time I come to know, the snake don't eat dead body, okay? Snake eat life body. So they said, whenever this python going to be hungry, which human being don't follow, hungry or hungry, human being eating and stealing, that is a different point. But when this python going to be hungry, and her food is there and going to grab and eat it. Then my whole mind blew up. I said, my God, this chicken have no idea that death is lying right before her. This chicken have no such ignorance. Just like I am so ignorant. My death is like lying with me, just like a python walking with me. And I don't even realize the time will come. Boom! So I was thinking about you talking about ignorance, how ignorance is. So my whole mind blew up. I said, my God, if this chicken has some knowledge about that his her or his death is right with her, she would try to get away from there. No, she's enjoying, you know, catching the body, eating the grass, you know, so nice. So as an ignorance living entity like me, always trying to be catching my body, trying to enjoy myself, you know, but the death is following every moment like a python.
Thank you, Ajamil. Hare Krishna.
Natari Armarman, 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 Natari Armarman.